you looking for a forum where you can discuss ACB Radio programming with presenters and fellow listeners? Then you may want to subscribe to ACB Radio Friends. It offers all of the same announcement material you'd receive on our ACB Radio announcements list, but in addition, it permits discussion with ACB Radio staff and listeners. To join, send a message to majordomo@telepath.com with subscribe ACB Radio-Friends in the body of the message. That's majordomo@telepath.com with subscribe ACB Radio-Friends in the body of your message. Keep in touch with ACB Radio, the station that's out of science. Welcome to Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and it's a pleasure to have you with us on this new time slot for Blind Line. If you were expecting Main Menu, then a reminder that that has now moved. It is on in 48 hours time from now, and that will be on, of course, on Tuesday night US time. That's Wednesday 1 till 3 Universal time. If you haven't kept up with our new schedule, it is now available on the ACB Radio website, and of course we'll keep you posted on the ACB Radio email list. It's always good to keep in touch with those. And on the program today, over the next couple of hours, well, we'll be talking in a moment with Penny Reader, the editor of the Braille Forum, and someone who does so much more for ACB at the National Office in Washington. And then we'll, speaking of Washington, give you a chance to talk in our open forum section about who you'll be trying to send to Washington if you're in the US. In 48 hours' time, of course, we'll be in the thick of it. Election results will be coming in, at least from some of the eastern states and southern states and things. So we'll find out all about what you think of that, and who you think is likely to be the next president of the US, and who you hope will be. They might not necessarily be the same thing. You are welcome to join in at any time, either to speak with our guest, Penny Reader, or to have your say in the open forum. As always, the number to call is in New York, area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter your PIN, enter 0480-5512. Those details are in your title bar, but that PIN again, 0480-5512. And thanks to spiderphone.com for making it all happen. Without any further ado, Penny Reader, very nice to have you on the show, and thank you for rescheduling for us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Jonathan. It's very nice to be here.
Well, many people who are listening to this have read the forum and look forward to it turning up in their mailbox or their email box. But perhaps let's go back a bit further than the forum and your work with ACB. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've done prior to working for ACB?
Before I worked for ACB, I guess I've always been a writer. Every job I ever got turned into a writing job. When I first got out of college, I went to work. I looked for work for about a year. I guess I didn't find anything. Finally took a job as a transcriptionist. And within a month, the transcription had turned into writing. So I worked there at that job, which was at the National Bureau of Standards, where I was a technical writer for about 5 years. And I stopped working and became a stay-at-home mom, and I was a stay-at-home mother for 20 years, during which time we had 6 children. And then I went to school to learn how to use talking computers, and the company which taught me how to use the computers hired me to be an administrative assistant, and after about 4 months as an AA, I became a writer for that organization. And I worked there for 3 years, and then I decided to go back to school and get my master's, and I was just finishing up the degree when the ACB job was announced, and I applied for it, and I got it. That's a very quick synopsis of who I've been for a long time.
One of the things that stands out from that brief resume, as it were, is that you're not afraid to upskill, to keep up with the times, and to get new tricks of the trade.
I'm always afraid, but I think you have to do it. If you don't do it, you're going to be left behind. I still miss the days of DOS, when computers were very easy to work with, and this whole internet radio thing is all very new to me, and it really took me a little courage to learn how to download WinAmp and figure out even how to get it online. But you can't be afraid, because if you are, you really will be left behind, I think. But I'm not Miss Technology, and I will be the first to admit that.
What's the source of that fear, do you think, or that reluctance among so many people to actually come to grips with technology?
I think because it's a machine one is interfacing with, and I think some people are just afraid that, you know, you push the wrong button, you hit the wrong switch, you're not going to be in control. I guess it's a control issue. I mean, I think in a relationship with people, you know, you have a second or a third or a fourth chance, but you don't feel the same way about a relationship with a machine.
Interesting. We'll come back and talk some more about that, but we already have a call for Penny Reader, and let's go to area code 336. Hello there. Hi. You're speaking with Penny. Well, apparently
but I
not.
I can't hear that
person. They're just absolutely dumbstruck, Penny, obviously, because I think they've gone away. Let me just...
Terrible.
They've vanished. They obviously decided not to talk to us after all, but that's okay. Being a stay-at-home mum, is that a conscious decision that you made, that parenthood is important enough to devote full time to it?
It evolved into a conscious decision. You know, that was in 73 when women's liberation was kind of at its height or its zenith. And I was certain that I would stay home for about 6 months and go into work. And I found that I just was absolutely enamored of my baby, Katrina, and I just couldn't imagine leaving her with anybody else. And so I stayed home, and then more children arrived. And with each child, it was the same thing. I just couldn't imagine leaving them in the care of anybody else. Now, I have a child now. My youngest is 10, and he goes to daycare every day. And sometimes I do feel guilty about that. I think he misses out some of the freedom that his older brothers and sisters had. Because I was always there when he came, when the other kids came home from school or whatever. And sometimes when I see Beth, it's 3 or 4 hours after school has been over, and he doesn't really remember the highlights of the days as he would have if I had met him at the door at 3:30. There are pros and cons. I love the job, and I wouldn't ever give it up to stay home. And, Beth is certainly capable of dealing with daycare, but it was a decision that evolved, as I said. You know, I just couldn't imagine leaving the kids with anybody else. I was very lucky to be able to do that. I know that's not the case for everybody.
I wonder whether you have any views on the challenges that blind parents face, and in particular... blind mothers, I think, because they tend to be the primary caregiver in most situations, and perhaps some of the stigma, some of the prejudices that you've had to overcome having had 6 children. When you go to the day groups and the play groups and the coffee mornings and things, you know, what do people expect, and how have you overcome that?
I really didn't find very many things that I couldn't do. But I think there are always attitudes to overcome, particularly with, I remember with the first pediatrician we had, I really felt that I had to prove myself to him. He was not convinced that I would be able to do everything that needed to be done. And that was unnerving, but I guess I've always been a person who's just been full of self-confidence. and I just was sure I could do it. And I had a lot of support from my husband, who can see. And that it was also helpful to have someone in the family who could drive and look at things that I might have missed. But I guess it was the attitudes of kind of authority figures. It was, you always had to prove yourself. You had to prove yourself to the principal and the kindergarten teacher. And when my older kids were younger, there was no way that I could read what they were reading. You know, scanners weren't around, or if they were, I didn't know about them. And... So that was kind of a challenge. And also when my older children were young, I didn't know Braille. I didn't learn Braille until about 7 years ago. When my youngest child was learning to read in print, I was learning to read in Braille, and we kind of learned together. It would have been easier to deal with homework and schoolwork if I had known Braille. But, you know, the breaks as you have the skills you need right at your hand, and other times you have to go out and get them.
We're speaking with Braille Forum editor Penny Reader on Blind Line today. A reminder that Main Menu is now on in 48 hours' time, and it's a new time slot. That's Tuesday night US time, Wednesday Universal. Let's try take two of area code 336. Hello there.
Hi, John. It's Jess from North Carolina. Sorry for that little error there. My phone decided to kind of like click me off the phone for a second.
Oh, man, those low-tech gadgets, they always do that.
Oh, yeah. I had a question, two questions. First of all, what really inspired you to make the, Braille Forum?
What inspired me to take the job?
Yeah, I guess, like, to produce it.
I had always, read the forum, even when I guess I've always been kind of an at-large member of ACB, and I had been a real member of a real affiliate for about 6 years. And I had always read the forum. And I actually knew no one kind of well. We lived very close to one another, and we were on each other's list of people we'd like to know better. Some of our kids were actually in the same class in elementary school and high school.
Mm.
So I was familiar with Nolan and with the forum, and I thought I could do a good job with it. I have decent, but I am.
Yeah, big sense. Other question is, you said that you had trouble, understanding what your kids were reading in school and, you know, with homeworks and stuff. How did you actually manage to find out exactly what they were doing?
I had lots of teacher conferences.
Oh.
I was lucky to have children who learned to read very early and could read me the homework out loud.
Yes, indeed.
And me the spelling list and that kind of thing.
Yeah, see, today you don't have to, you know.
Now I communicate with teachers via email, and it's terrific.
Oh, yes. Today you don't have to, you know, prove yourself, like you said.
Well, I think you always, if you're a blind person, you're always going to have to prove yourself.
Yeah.
You know, your confidence is going to be really high, and you're going to, something will happen. This is to undermine that confidence. I think you're always going to have to prove yourself. But maybe not as much now as 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. And hopefully, as time progresses, we won't, you know, we'll see a list of that in the future. John, I guess you have some more calls waiting.
Well, that's right. I was just going to ask you, are you
very
particularly...
Nice to meet you.
Are you interested in writing yourself, Jess?
Just a second. Got some distractions going on outside my room here. What was that?
I just wondered, are you interested in being
writing?
A writer?
I guess, since you brought the question up, I may as well say, I like writing a lot of papers where, you know, it's the point of view, writing style, I guess, because, you know, that really opens myself up, especially in, like, a topic that I'm really interested in, I like writing about it, but I don't like writing about, like, summaries of, you know, like, classics or something.
You like essays. You like to
yeah,
get your point
exactly.
out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You should send me some of your stuff. I'm always looking for new people to put forward.
Yeah, I always like to write about computer stuff, too.
Yeah? I'm looking for those kinds of experts as well.
Yeah. Well, it's been good to talk to you, and I guess I'll talk to you later, Jonathan.
Yeah, okay, Juice, have a good one.
All right,
you too.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. We're speaking with Braille Forum editor Penny Reader, and if you would like to do that and you're listening live between 8 and 10 Eastern Time on a Sunday evening in the United States, that's 1 till 3 Universal Time on Monday, then you can do that either on the telephone, or if you're unable to make the long distance call, you can use a tool such as MSN Messenger or one of the other free utilities to call area code 212-812-2800, that's in the US, area code 212-812-2800, and when asked to enter a PIN, just enter 0480-5512, courtesy of spiderphone.com. That pin again, 0480-5512, and then you'll hear the program down the phone, and we'll come to you, and you can ask your question of Penny Reader, the Braille Forum editor. Let me ask you, what was the reaction? How did you feel when you got told that you were the new editor of the Braille Forum?
Oh, I was delighted. I was amazed. You know, just the whole becoming a finalist was amazing to me. I had no idea until about a month before I sent in the application that I was even going to do it. And what happened was I went to a Josephine Taylor conference. I don't know if you know about that, but it's a conference for special educators, and it's sponsored by the American Foundation for the Blind and the Association for Education of Blind Children, among others. And I went as a graduate student from GW, and while I was there, I met people from ACB who made me feel like, you know, that we had a lot in common in terms of how we looked at the world. And I met Debbie Grubb, I had never met her, and Michael Byington, and Charlie was new. I met him kind of briefly, and I met Paul. And so then I was talking to Debbie over lunch and saying, you know, I know this vacancy is open. I wonder if maybe I'm thinking about applying for it. And she encouraged me to do it and said, and Michael Byington, and they both introduced me to Janine Stanley, who was on the BOP at that point. And she also encouraged me, and so I just did it. And just being one of the three, there were three people who were finally chosen. It was narrowed down. And then I got to fly to California. I'd never been to California, just for the interview. It was just fantastic. So then when I got the job, I was delighted.
Had you been to conventions of ACB before? Sorry, there's a bit of a delay there. Sometimes it plays havoc with us. I was just saying, have you been to conventions of ACB before this?
I had been the year before when they were in Orlando. I was a scholarship winner because I was getting my master's degree. But I had seen very little of the convention. I chose to work in the exhibit hall. I worked selling CCTVs. And because I wanted to buy tickets for my kids who I brought with me so they could go to Disney, they had really supported me during that whole year of graduate study. Molly and Casey had made dinner every night I was in class, and I just thought that I owed it to them. And I was delighted to get the scholarship, and I was equally delighted to get to go to Orlando and take them with me, and that's where I stayed. Well, I didn't see much of the convention. I went to the events, which were specifically for scholarship winners, but I didn't go to any general sessions, and I had to get back to class. I think I left on Tuesday, and convention must have started on Sunday, so I really wasn't there for very long.
In the U.S., of course, you have a choice of blindness consumer organizations. What caused you in particular to gravitate towards the ACB?
I think the very rigid attitudes of the NFB. I have friends who are in the NFB, but I really don't like being told that there is one right answer for everything. And I was not a fan of Jernigan. I gravitate toward ACB because I believe it's a more democratic organization. And I think ACB is less judgmental of blind people than NFB is. I always gravitated toward ACB.
It seems to me that you're doing a lot more than just editing the forum, but can we talk about the tasks involved in doing that, first off? What do you have to do in order to get the forum out every month?
I have to solicit articles, which I am always doing. If something newsworthy is going on, I either try to cover it myself or find someone whom I believe knows enough about it to cover it. For instance, Charlie Hodge was able to go to the Supreme Court hearing of the Garrett case, and I was delighted that he could give me an article at the very last minute about what happened at that hearing. So anyway, I get a lot of articles, and then it's up to me to edit them, and Karen and I work together to do the mechanics of getting them. I still edit in WordPerfect for DOS. I'm still not very comfortable with Microsoft Word. I can use it, but I'm not good at it. So I edit or write whatever has to be done for the month, and then Sharon and I read it aloud, and we do a couple more edits, or I edit while she reads, and then she takes it through PageMaker, and then we send it to on disk to the various publishers. We spend about 3 weeks getting the articles ready and try to send them out, whole forum out, by the 10th, preceding the month that it's before. So it's just mostly a lot of editing and some reporting. Not as much as I'd like, but the Forum is not a daily newspaper, and then you really can't cover breaking news. Those breaking news breaks, and then there's new breaking news that supersede it. So the things I cover tend to be more longer range than, for instance, if it were a daily kind of show.
Yeah, as a general rule, do you find that you have an overabundance of articles, or...?
We have enough now for... December is over full. We have enough for January into February right now.
Oh.
That doesn't mean we want people to stop sending us things. I don't. I welcome submissions. But we have a huge overflow.
That presumably means, then, that you do have to say to people, look, we just can't run what you've submitted.
I don't do that very often. I usually try to find a way to run what someone has submitted, because I think the Forum is exactly that, the Forum. I sometimes edit things very dramatically, but I do try to run what people do. Sometimes, if I think something's inappropriate, I might redirect a person. I might say, this is a really good thing you've said, but maybe you'd like to present this kind of slant on it and redirect it. But I really try to use everything that everyone sends me. Sometimes I try to get a complimentary article. Like if I get an article on something controversial, I'll try to get an article from someone on the other side and run them both at the same time.
I was interested in your comment that you have friends who are Federationists, and so have I. And it's like one of those, some of my best friends are. But I wonder. I wonder. One of the criticisms that is often levelled at me when I talk to Federationists about being involved with ACB Radio is they say the trouble with ACB is that there's too much government by committee and too little of putting people into a job and allowing them to get on with it. And I guess your committee is the Board of Publications. Can you explain a bit about what the Board of Publications is and how the system works, and is it really a bit like being run by a committee, and how unwieldy is that?
Not unwieldy at all. It's never been unwieldy. I've never found it to be. And I was a little worried about that when I took the job, because I was interviewed by members of the BOP. So I wondered how much control they would want over my day-to-day life. And I've had no control, really. There's a policy manual, which is written by the BOP, which is available to anybody in the organization. And I use that if I have questions. But I use the BOP as a sounding board sometimes if I have a specific question. If I'm, I have not found them to be at all intrusive in what I want to do.
So, is it actually unconstitutional for the elected officers of ACB to tell you that you can't put something in the Forum?
Yes, it is.
Hmm. And that stems from the very founding of ACB, right? That there were concerns about the way the Monitor was being used during what's referred to as the Civil War period for certain propaganda-type activities.
That's right. But yeah, it is. I mean, even, for instance, I work in the national office, and to some extent, Charlie Crawford is my boss, but he couldn't tell me constitutionally that I couldn't run something. I would likely... talk to him about something I thought was controversial, but the decision is still not.
Does that create tensions ever?
It has, yeah, it could, but it hasn't so far. But Charlie and I kind of see the world, on most issues we see the world the same way, so it hasn't created any tension, but I could certainly see that it could. And then I think that the Board of Publications would certainly back me up.
So, does the Board of Publications meet regularly with you to review the way the Forum is performing, or do they simply set the boundaries? You referred to the policy manual, and then leave you to get on with it.
That's all they do. They set the policy manual. We do meet when we have to make decisions. For instance, this month, we'll send out bidding letters to the Braille producers and the cassette recording company that we use and others, and solicit new bids. And then we'll have a conference call, I will, along with the Board of Publications, and we'll talk about those bids. We also have conference calls to discuss awards, but I don't have a vote in that process. We still have conference calls to discuss the outcome.
Mm.
We have two meetings, in-person meetings a year. We have a meeting in July, right before the convention, and we have a meeting at mid-year, right before the mid-year meetings. And I write a report to the BOB at each of those junctions, tell them what I've been doing. But there's no oversight directly, you know, on a day-to-day basis or even a month-to-month basis. I wouldn't ever have to send them a table of contents if they just have to be in the form. That's how it works. At least that's how it's worked with Kim Charlson as the chair and me as the editor so far.
Do you disclose how many people receive the Braille Forum each month?
I have 25,000 subscribers. We're about to purge our database, and we may have significantly fewer subscribers after that happens. But I don't think it'll be a significant number that it'll go down. But certainly, we don't want it to go to houses where it's not being read. It's going somewhere to someone who's died or who has withdrawn from the organization or just doesn't want to read it. We want to find that out. But we are going to purge our database. But as of right now, we have 25,000 subscribers.
And that would likely amount to even more readers than that, right? Because generally one edition may be read by...
People read it online.
Mm.
Sure. People read it online and people read it in libraries. Lots of our subscribers are libraries. So it gets read by at least a third more people than that. I don't know. And then we get a lot of visitors on the website to the Braille Forum.
Yes, obviously the ACB members are going to read it and lap it up and find out what's going on, but do you also find that you get reaction from, let's say, decision makers, for instance, politicians or public officials who may take a look at it as well?
I get reactions from officials. For instance, I know Fred Schroeder when I interviewed him. That was the first thing I did when I came to work at ACB. The first time I was there, I was interviewing Fred Schroeder. He's the commissioner of rehab services, and I know he read it. I do get reactions from time to time from various officials. Recently, I went to visit the head of rehab services in Maryland, and he was asking me about an article he saw in the forum. So I know that it gets read.
What kind of subject matter do you look for in forum articles? Or perhaps to put it another way, is there material that you just would not run because it doesn't fit with the mission or the style of the forum?
I wouldn't run anything that attacks somebody personally. Otherwise, I'm pretty open. I think if a person can make a case for one point of view over another, then I'm likely to run it. I've tried in the last year to increase the number of articles on education because I think that parents are just desperate for information if they have children. So I've attempted to increase those sorts of articles. And I've done this series with Sarah Blake about adjusting to a new guide dog because I don't know much about guide dogs, and so I found those articles to be personally very interesting. I think we have to keep abreast of what's going on. We have to cover the Americans with Disability Act and the threats against it. I would like to do an article about the narrators versus the APH situation, but because it's such not a long-term news story, I haven't done it yet. I've only gotten information from one side on that issue, and I really would prefer to have two sides before I run the articles that might cover that situation. But I think we have to cover the issues that people are talking about.
Yeah, and that certainly is one. I understand from some dialogue I've seen on email lists that the Braille Monitor has run a piece on that, and I haven't had a chance to catch up with the last couple of editions of that. But it
well,
must...
I haven't either. They send it to me, but I just haven't. I read the table of contents and it's sitting here waiting to look at, but I haven't.
Yeah.
I know they did.
It must be difficult to run the Braille Forum in the way that I guess ACB's culture requires it to be run, in the sense that the forum does not generally go in for pushing an ACB view of things. It pushes the views of those who choose to contribute, but it doesn't kind of say this is the organization policy as such.
Well, in some ways it does, because there's always a message from the president.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a message from the executive director. So in those ways, the leadership of the organization has a chance to express views. Now, there's always letters to the editor, too, in which people can disagree with it. So that's why it's a forum. That's what I like about it.
Hmm. Now, I know that you're also extremely busy at convention time, and one of the things that was a bit sad for me was that having gone all that way to convention, I didn't really get to catch up with you as much as I thought I would, but that is a really busy time with the press room and things. Can you tell us a bit about what goes on at convention from your side of things?
It's phenomenally busy. I had no idea how busy it was. You know, I got the job in September, and, well, actually, I had the interview for the job the preceding July, and I was at the Los Angeles convention, and I did visit the press room, including a visit during the evening when they were collating, but I had no idea how overwhelming it was. The press room is open just about 24 hours a day. The press room runs a newspaper. It was called, what was it called? In Louisville. I can't even remember. But anyway, the newspaper is a way to keep conventioneers abreast of what's happening at the convention. So that's the primary focus of the newspaper. And I also wanted it to have at least one story a day about some major event that was happening at the convention, which meant that we didn't get around to producing it till about 3 in the afternoon at the earliest. We would start producing it at 3 and try to get it going by 6. And then it has to be produced in Braille. And we had a very dedicated staff in the newsroom, in the press room, of volunteers. And these people, Gary Patterson and Erling Hughes and Frank Pacheco and Steve Spiker, and I don't want to forget anybody, so these are two of the people that helped me. They spent hours and hours railing and calling, and it was just an overwhelming experience. I was amazed. One, how dedicated people can be, and two, how long it took. It just took forever to run the newspaper. One reason was that for the first 2 days, we only had one Braille printer. And so it really did take many people all night for at least 2 nights just to collate and Braille the newspaper. There's also a news line that we do from the news press room, and it's twice a day. And it's just kind of update of happenings. For instance, if the GUI meeting is being moved from room A to room C, then there'll be an announcement to that effect on the news line. People also use the newspaper to run ads, and we accept ads all day long. And that in itself is kind of amazing, because you're trying to answer the phone, cover the news, write the articles, proofread the Braille, and make sure that the people who are going to be producing the news line know what they're doing all at once. And it was an amazing operation. Next year it's going to be a little better, because we're going to rent computers. We're not going to be dealing with software that's 10 years old, which is what we were using. And we're going to talk to BT Kimbrough and others early in the game and try to get the fastest possible Braille printers as early as possible. And I don't know what we're going to do about the news line, but I think we're going to look for another system other than their answering machine, which had, I think it was a 7-minute tape loop. It was difficult to use a machine experience. I don't know. I'm talking too fast. Yeah. I just can't tell you how overwhelming the press room was. like yeah, to get no sleep. And but people like the newspaper, so I think that was...
Well, they do. I mean, I think because it gives a real sense of community to the convention that it's got its very own newspaper. But I wondered whether, given the hassles of the production of the newspaper, whether other methods may replace Braille at some point. For example, having a much bigger newsline type system where one calls into a telephone reader type setup where you can skim the articles over a touch-tone phone. And I guess that may not be a terribly popular suggestion in an organisation that rightly feels passionately about Braille.
I think you're right. I think Braille has an advantage that you're never going to find in that kind of telephone system, and that you can carry it around and refer to it quietly, and you don't have to stop what you're doing to read it. And there's a real difference between reading something with your fingers or your eyes and listening to it. So I can't imagine that that suggestion would be met very favorably. I mean, it certainly would make my life easier to some extent. But on the other hand, I really do like writing, and I like having the opportunity to write. And it's different writing a newspaper, even if it's a little tiny newspaper, than recording messages for the newspaper. I think both systems really need to be in place.
But then it's good stress, isn't it? I mean, there's something very team-building-like about putting that sort of thing together, and when you get the product out the door and people are lapping it up, it's a good feeling.
It is a great feeling. It was wonderful. Pat Sheehan would come every morning to pick our newspapers and deliver them. And it was just a pleasure to give them to him and know. And he would come back and tell us that people, you know, he had already handed out all the newspapers, and did we have any more, and people really liked them, and that's a wonderful feeling. And my team of volunteers is still communicating with one another. They're calling themselves the Restroom Knights or something, Knights with a K. We've been talking back and forth about how we can make the operation run more smoothly next year. So I think it'll always be a learning experience, and there'll always be things we can improve on and change, and we're just very lucky to have so many people who are willing to give up such a significant part of their time at convention for everybody else, because that's what they're doing.
Another really exciting thing about this year's convention is that you have a special edition coming out of the Braille Forum devoted entirely to convention.
It is exciting. I'm working on it and have been. Sharon and I have both been working on it pretty much in a dedicated way in the last week, and I still have to listen Saturday and write the summary for Saturday. But I think it'll be a really good issue. I think people will like having everything about the convention in one issue. And we have lots of great pictures, which I haven't even... I just know that we have them. Sharon and I haven't even gone over them to talk about what they are. But I think it'll be a really...
Yeah, well, that photographer of yours kept coming up and saying, when are you gonna put something really nice on so I can take a decent picture?
He's a really funny guy.
He's a great guy.
He's a great photographer. He's been working with ACB for a number of years. He and Nolan are very good friends. And I felt very lucky that Ken would come and be our photographer. And there was some question that and he might not want to do it, but we felt very pleased. The neat thing about having Ken be our photographer is that he knows everybody.
Mm.
And so, and he kind of knows what events are the most important or the ones that people will want to know the most about. So it's good not to have to educate him from scratch when he came to the convention. We felt very good. And he gave us all the photos on CD this year, which is like really new. You know, we used to get those big cardboard sheets with the little slides that you had to look through a viewer to look at. So that's kind of cool too.
Yeah, it's just great when they can do things like that. And here's a question I know that you will love to answer. When, Penny, when are we going to see this Braille Forum convention edition?
Oh, I wish I could answer it. Sharon and I hope to have it out by... We hope to send it to all the printers, braillers, and recorders on Friday. That assumes that I will finish up my summary of Saturday. I've edited most of the other stuff. I'm really just ending up with the summaries. It's hard to summarize a whole day of general sessions and not make it boring and make sure that you get all the highlights, and also keep it down to a reasonable number of words. So it's a challenge, but it's going to be a good chew. I think you'll like it.
It'll be great when it arrives, and I sort of know what you're going through to a kind of miniature degree, because I've just been sitting here listening to the whole convention again and slicing it and dicing it into little bits for the final version on the web. So, and it's quite good, because when you get to hear it a second time, you absorb a lot more. You know, when you're in the middle of the atmosphere, and you know, you don't quite get it all.
That's true. I didn't get to go to many general sessions because I was in the press room, but I did go to Friday and Saturday, and I was there for a little while on Thursday. But it is a whole different experience when you're listening to the tapes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the convention. What else are you doing at National Office besides editing the Braille Forum?
I'm the person at the National Office who's most interested in special education kinds of issues. I've been attending Office of Special Education focused meetings to try to determine where OSEP wants to go in the next 5 or 10 years. And that's been really interesting. It's been kind of strategic planning sorts of things. I went to a 2-day session in September, and there'll be another session in 2 weeks. And those are good. It's been good, and I think that ACB has been involved in that, because I was the only person from a consumer group at those meetings, and I thought that was very important. And I tend to gravitate toward those special ed kinds of issues, so I'm involved in those. I'm involved with you and Erlene in that we all work together to try to make the website and ACB Radio terrific, and I think working very well. And I'm trying to I spend a lot of time reading and following what's going on in the disabled community and in the blindness community as well. And I attend press conferences when I think it's important to go, and I do a lot of emails. I spend a lot of time every day. I have a minimum of about 250 I do a lot of email. I'm on the ACB list, but I'm also on the list for parents of blind children, the ROP list. And I'm on the AER listserv, and a couple more, but I can't remember what they are at the moment. I spend a lot of time with them. That's kind of what I do.
Well, there's a lot we can come back to, and I will. We're speaking to Penny Reader from the Braille Forum, among other things, at ACB's National Office, and you're welcome to call in with a question, as someone just has, from the mysterious unknown void. Hello there.
Good evening, Jonathan. This is Steve Bauer out of Wichita, Kansas, calling.
All right. Now, do you realize there are two Steve Bowers? I had no idea that there were two Steve Bowers, so it was very confusing, but you're the one I interviewed last week, so I know who you are.
It is confusing. The difference is we have different middle initials, and the similarities go wide and far. Except he lives in California, and I'm in Kansas. I guess that's the important difference.
It is, and all I can say is that, as John Lennon once said, "Bower to the Beeble."
One comment, kind of, and in the form of a question. In talking about the Newsline service, and of course being a former radio person, I find it to be very important at national conventions. I was thinking that a bare bones telephone reader service might just provide some extreme flexibility and a very easy way of updating that particular information source.
I wonder how much do you think something like that would cost? That's the issue always. Is, you know, ACB never has extra money to spend on anything.
Well, unfortunately, that's a question I really can't answer, but with basic computer equipment not being very expensive, that it shouldn't be that bad. I probably should deal with that issue privately, but it would give some extreme flexibility, allowing some messages to be recorded one time, and then if they need to be retained for the next day, they would just be on the system, and it would make updating much faster. Than using.
Steve, why don't you call me next week and explain it to me?
Okay, I think I can handle that.
I would like that very much. And I'd like that, you know, I'm always open to suggestions from people.
Well, Jonathan and I.
I admit that I don't know.
Yeah.
Lots of times, but I'm always willing to learn.
Well, Jonathan and I had an interesting hour-plus conversation about telephone reader last week, and I don't know if he will sit back and see the benefits of how it might serve as the newsline service, but I think it has some real possibilities.
Yeah, that was really the basis of my question to Penny earlier in the interview, but I hope you're getting a good commission from the telephone reader man, because you're certainly doing a good job of interesting a lot of people in the software, and I know that we in New Zealand are investigating that a little more closely as a result of your interview on Blindline.
Well, it's a dynamite service, and as I mentioned on my interview last week, I'm hooked on it, and I find it so challenging to be able to read the newspaper and other publications, and as I told you, we're using it as a job hotline at the bank that I work at, so I think there's a lot of applications that are out there if people would just be a little creative in their thinking. So it may be a possibility to help with the Newsline service, and I'll get with Penny sometime next week and see if we can put our heads together and see if we could possibly put a plan together.
Excellent.
That sounds great. Is your interview from last week archived on ACB Radio?
Yes.
I believe it is.
That's something I never get enough time to do, Jonathan, is listen to what I've missed.
Do you know that...
I used to keep the radio on, but I can't work because I get so interested in what's on that I forget to write.
Yeah, that is exactly one of the problems that I have, that so we have so many good programs now on mainstream that I often find myself unable to sit down and listen to them, because if I keep it on in the background, I just grind to a halt and I just don't have the time to do that. And it's a bit of a shame, really.
Sure. It is. You had some guy on, like, I was listening on Friday. It was somebody who was, like, a bird watcher or something. I knew nothing about that stuff. And, yeah, 10 minutes, 15 minutes went by, and I was only listening to the radio.
Yeah.
I can't keep it on. But I will look at that archive, because that sounds very interesting.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate your calling, Steve, and we'll keep in touch.
You bet. We'll talk with you later on.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye now. This is Blindline on ACB Radio. I'm Jonathan Mosen. It's 5 minutes before the hour as we're broadcasting this live, and hopefully my voice will hold up for another hour. I can feel it starting to give out. But we're speaking with Penny Reader. She's the editor of the Braille Forum, and if you'd like to give her a call, we've got a few more minutes left. You can do that by calling area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked to enter a PIN, courtesy of spiderphone.com, enter 0480-55 or 12. It's 0480-5512. I know that one of the really great things about the working relationship that we all have at ACB is that I often get items from you, Penny, that are timely so that I can follow them up for ACB Radio. But I wondered, have you ever considered a kind of a Braille Forum web edition that kind of updates things on a daily or weekly basis as they come to hand?
Well, I was thinking of that when I first took the job, but I can't imagine having the staff, the time to do it. I would have to have a bigger staff, because it's just, you know, there's just not enough hours in the day. And it's so different covering something that's timely, you know, than it would be covering something that's 6 weeks out. I did think about it very seriously, and I was all gung-ho, and then I took the job and started doing the work, and although I would still like to do it maybe down the road at some point, there's no way we could do it right now with the budget and the staffing. But it's a very good idea, and you filled that gap very nicely. We're very lucky that we can send you breaking news, or often I get announcements from somebody that will say, always from AFB, I don't know why, they always send me things after the deadline was for them to go into the forum. You know, and it'll be some scholarship or some award or something that people need to nominate somebody for within the next 5 or 6 or 10 days, and it's just too late for me to get in the forum. So I always feel grateful that I can send it along to you and I know that people will hear it.
Yeah, it's a good thing. And obviously one of the things about ACB Radio is you have to have a certain kind of technology, and so there are some people who can read web pages who don't at the moment have the ability to access the radio. But hopefully as technology gets updated and this machinery gets in the hands of more people, that will be less of a problem.
Oh, I think your cell phones will really change the way everybody does everything.
Mm.
The national office is planning to do a weekly radio show for ACB Radio.
Oh, yes, we should talk about that, because this has been the much-promised show, isn't it?
Yes, it is a long-time promised show, but, you know, we are so busy. I just, we're going to get to it. Once we work it into our schedule and make it part of our routine, it will happen.
Yeah.
And that way we can cover news that's a little more breaking, and that'll be a good thing.
Well, that will be absolutely fantastic when that show materializes, and we'll look forward to that. Let me take you back to special ed, which you were talking about before Steve called in. How does it feel to be the only consumer representative in that sort of setting? Are you listened to all the more intently because you're a consumer representative, or is there a little bit of distance there because of you being the only consumer rep?
I thought I was listened to very intently. I thought it made a big difference. I liked it. I am in between these two meetings, they have put up a website and are posting articles and not articles so much as people are continuing to work on the same strategic sorts of planning goals, and that website has not been very accessible to me, and people have emailed me attachments and like triple columns, and that hasn't been accessible to me either. But I've always emailed them back and said, you know, this is a great, looks like a great attachment, but I can't read it. And they've gone out of their way to make it accessible to me. They went out of their way to provide me with Braille. I mean, huge amounts of Braille. And there weren't very many blind people at this meeting. I think I was probably one of three people who were getting Braille. So, yeah, I thought they did a very good job of making me feel like they were paying attention to what I had to say.
You obviously monitor the disability rights movement in general and the way that people are feeling about the election, which in 48 hours' time, we probably won't know the outcome of, because it'll only be about 9 o'clock Eastern and some of the polls won't have closed, and it'll be a bit close this time. But
I don't think we'll know until California comes in.
Yeah, well, that's the biggie. And George Bush is promising it's going his way, even though the polls say otherwise. But how is it feeling out there? It seems to me, surprisingly enough, that I would have thought the disability rights movement would almost be unanimously for Gore, just because of the Supreme Court issues at the moment and some of the other civil rights matters, the contesting of the ADA, etc. But there does seem to be, you know, quite a bit of Bush support out there in the disability community.
I don't understand it. But one thing, I think because I'm in Washington and I see, you know, the newspaper I read is the Washington Post. The people you run into, even on the subway commuting back and forth to work, are talking about politics and, or, you know, lobbyists or politicians or work on the Hill or whatever. I think this is a very political town, and I think there really is a big difference between inside the Beltway and outside the Beltway. And people out in Missouri or Nebraska or, you know, Idaho often view Washington as the enemy. And whether or not that's true, that's the perception they have. And I think that's a whole different viewpoint. I think it's hard to make people excited about the Supreme Court who don't think about it very often. You know, here in D.C., you think about it a lot, but I don't think the rest of the country probably does. I think people remember. I really don't know what to say. It doesn't make sense. And I can't imagine that you would be for Bush if you look at his record and you look at Texas.
Well, do we know much about Bush's record in terms of disability issues in Texas? Does he have much of a profile in that area?
I don't know that he does in terms of disability issues, but in terms of education and poverty-related issues and welfare-to-work kinds of issues, you know, he's a lot more conservative than Gore, and Texas has not a very stellar record in terms of education, especially special education. A couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago, there was a the Department of Rehab in Texas attempted to merge the Commission for the Blind into the other rehabilitation services, and Bush did nothing overtly to support specialized services for people who are blind. I don't know why people would be for Bush and not for Gore, unless they just don't trust him because he seems to be a Washington kind of insider. And even though Bush, who's the president, is the son of a Washington person and grew up for a significant part of his life on the East Coast and in Washington, people just treat him the same way.
Well, that's yes.
The disability community, I think, should have made a bigger effort to get disabled people registered. It's fine to say get out and vote, but if you didn't get registered in time, then you're not going to be able to get out and vote. And if I had anything to say about it, that's what I would say. A bigger effort should have been made to get people registered.
Are you disappointed, though, that Vice President Gore has really not said a heck of a lot about disability issues? I must say, I have been listening to CNN pretty much round the clock while I've been stuck in bed the last few days, and I did notice on a campaign rally that they broadcast that he made a very fleeting reference to it when he was talking about why people should vote for him, and he said civil rights are at stake, disability rights are at stake. So he's saying that a vote for him is a vote to secure further advancement or even retention of disability rights, and yet I guess one should say, in the interest of fairness, that it was George Bush's dad who saw the ADA pass when he was president.
That's true, it was. But you know, in the summer when they were doing all the ADA celebrations, I actually met Gore at a meeting of disability rights organizations, and I was very impressed with his understanding of disability issues, and I took a deep breath and asked a question, and I was the only blind person. There were about 40 people in the room. There were lots of people in wheelchairs. There was one person who was deaf. Now there were people with disabilities that, you know, I don't know what they were, but I knew I was the only blind person in the room, and that's why I made myself take a deep breath and ask the question. And he listened very intently to my question and answered it very specifically. And I was impressed. So I, of course, never met Bush, and I have no idea if he would do the same thing. But I felt that Al Gore really treated the group with a great deal of respect and sensitivity. There were people who were angry and didn't make any bones about their being angry. You know, they didn't hesitate to tell Gore that they were mad about this or that or the other thing. And he seemed to really listen to them with a great deal of respect. So I tried to answer their specific concerns, and so I was very impressed.
One of Al Gore's relatives, I think grandfather was it, was one of the few blind senators.
Yeah, I heard that. And I guess he had an aunt, or has an aunt, who was also blind. Now, a lot of people blame Gore's what do you call that thing that he does where he's streamlining government? I don't know, there's some like R word for this whole campaign of his to reduce paperwork and streamline.
Yeah, the reinventing government.
And a lot of, that's it, reinventing, thank you. A lot of people believe that because of his campaign with reinventing government, that was destructive for the Babbitt's Wagner Day program and the National Industries of the Blind. Maybe that's another reason why some people aren't supporting him.
Well, one of the things that's really good from my point of view about this is that I did American history and political science as an undergraduate, but of course I'm not partisan because it doesn't really directly affect me. So I find it quite interesting to watch this as an independent observer. Yeah, but one of the things that really struck me as interesting is what I guess would be considered both a strength and a weakness, and that is that if you give Al Gore a topic, he seems to be able to just get up there on the spot and spout forth really quite lucid factual information. Well, I guess some people would say sometimes information with a bit of exaggeration thrown in, but he can talk on any topic authoritatively, even to the point of giving statistics on any topic. And I suppose that that's also considered a weakness by those people who think he's just too smooth. He's part of the insincere Washington culture where you'll say anything to get elected, and they see in George Bush a kind of almost a boyish sincerity that's not common in Washington these days.
I guess it's a tension between kind of an emotional versus a more analytical kind of approach to life. And people who tend to be more emotional trust the analytical kind of approach. I was a poli-sci major and as an undergrad, so I like the same thing too. I appreciate that kind of. And people say that Al Gore is a policy wonk as a criticism, and I like that.
Yeah, it begs the question, what do Americans want in a president? Clearly, Al Gore is the kind of person who will, if he's president, take advice, I'm sure. But he's the kind of person who has enough of a grip on any issue in the end to either take that advice or leave it and make a decision, probably a heat-of-the-moment decision if necessary. Whereas it seems to me that the kind of president George W. Bush is likely to be is somebody who surrounds himself with the best quality people he can, delegate a lot more because he's not a minute detail kind of person, and really concentrate on bringing people together, the sort of the feel-good factor, the that kind of leadership style. So I think there are two very clear choices in terms of leadership styles up for grabs this time.
Oh, I think so too. It couldn't be clearer. It's really kind of a lot like the difference between, say, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. Reagan was kind of this feel-good kind of guy who he didn't think was all that bright. He surrounded himself with advisors who pretty much ran the show. And I think that's exactly what we'll get if we elect Bush.
Yes, and when Americans look back on the Reagan presidency, by and large, it seems to me from this distance, they look back on the Ronald Reagan presidency with quite a degree of affection.
Nostalgia, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't get it because I don't. I thought the 80s were awful.
Well, that's interesting. I appreciate...
They were awful for my family.
I hope that you've introduced for us a topic that I want to continue in the open forum part of the program, because we only have a couple of days before people in the US are going to have to make this decision, and I hope whatever decision they make that they actually get out there and make it. And, you know, we...
I hope so too.
In this country, we have about a 95% voter turnout, and so when I hear that America, which purports to be one of the greatest democracies in the world, is down there in the 50s, I find it really weird.
It is weird, isn't it? It's depressing.
Why is it? Are people just absolutely convinced that no matter what they do, it's not going to make a difference anyway?
I think people really do believe that they won't make much of a difference. I'm not one of those people, but you know, I've heard people say that. I can't imagine not voting. I love to vote. It's one of my favorite things. People talk about voting online as a way to make voting accessible. And I really don't like that idea because I like to go and vote. I like to go and be with all those other people who are voting. I used to like it when there was a machine and you could pull a lever. I like the actual physical process of voting. But I can't imagine not voting. A lot of people don't.
Given that we have an international audience here, can you explain the voting process? Because from what I can gather, there are levers and buttons that you press. Is that right?
In different jurisdictions. When I first voted, which was in probably there were voting where I lived. There was a voting machine, and we would go into this little machine. Somebody went with me, and they read me the ballot and. They somehow pushed a lever or something, or somehow indicated my answer. And then at the very end, there was this great big lever, and you would take hold of it and pull it down, and it would go, bonk, and you would know that your votes had gone in, and they were going to be counted. Where I live now, we have a system of punch cards, very much like computer punch cards, I think that's the
goodness.
And you punch... there's a little circle, and you punch in that little circle. My husband always votes with me, and he goes, to pretend that he's doing the opposite of what I say, but he isn't, and he votes for me that way. Or I could have, if I didn't trust my husband, I could get an election judge to do it. In Oregon, I think you can vote by mail. There was a state during the primaries that attempted to allow people to vote online, but it didn't work out very well. I think each jurisdiction has its own kind of mechanical system for doing it. When I was a kid, people used to have paper ballots. They would mix out the square and fold the ballot and put it in the ballot box. But there's not one universal system, but it does happen universally on one day.
Right. Now, as a political scientist, can you give me your view? Do you think that the Electoral College has had its day? Should it be one person, one vote for president right across the U.S.?
I really don't know. I remember wrestling with it when I was an undergraduate and deciding for some reason. I can't remember whether the Electoral College was a thing. Probably because I really felt that people will I don't know why. I don't remember why. Don't ask me because I don't know. I'm sure that at the policy walk all over CNN and all the major networks and NPR will be explaining to us again in the next couple of days, and I'll try to become reacquainted with the issue.
Well, yes, I've been lying in bed developing a completely alternative theory to the Electoral College, but I'm sure it will make a lot of difference. Not, but I really appreciate you coming on the program. You know, it's always good to catch up, and I hope that we can do this again sometime. And if people want to suggest things for the forum, perhaps they'd like to submit something. What's the best way for people to contact you?
I will take articles in any kind of form that I've gotten articles on tape. I have one right now that someone recorded for me about sailing that I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And I get articles in Braille. And I get articles sent to me via snail mail that are typewritten. And I actually had a letter to the editor which someone called in on the phone the other day, and I just transcribed it as he read it to me or told me what he wanted to say. I like getting articles in email, and if you do send me something in email, I want you to send it as an attachment in Microsoft Word, or even better, just paste the text into your email. I guess that's it. You don't know exactly what you want to say, but you know you want to say something, and you don't like to write, I'll be happy to do an interview with you. So I'm pretty flexible in the way I will accept material.
That's cool, and given that people who are listening to this are likely to have email, then you are at preader@acb.org.
That's right, and it's R-E-E-D-E-R.
Excellent, yes. Well, thank you so much for giving up your Sunday evening, and we'll be watching the election.
Oh, you're welcome.
We'll be watching the election with interest in a couple of days, I tell you.
I know, it's
becoming
a nail biter.
Have a good evening.
You too, Jonathan.
Okay.
Thanks for calling me. Hope you feel better.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
That's Penny Reeder, the editor of the Braille Forum. Wonderful to speak with her. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, it's the open forum part of the program, Blind Line on, excuse me, on ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. And what I would really like to talk, I mean, you're welcome to talk about something else, but what I'd really like to hear from people in the US on is who's going to make the best president and why. And it doesn't have to be just the disability issues, but obviously that may be the perspective that you want to come from. If you'd like to get in touch, you're most welcome. Hopefully you'll see the number on your window title bar. Hello, area code 336.
Hi, John. It's Jess again.
Hi, Jess.
Right. Commenting on a few things. First of all, it's kind of a minor comment here. First of all, your stream broke up. It might be on my end, or I don't know. But during the interview, your stream kind of broke up, so I had to reconnect a couple of times.
Okay, it stayed connected. We haven't actually dropped the stream since we connected about an hour and a bit ago, so it may be just one of those, hopefully it's just one of those things that's local to you.
Maybe. Anyway, But to answer your question about why, the U.S. Voting rate is so low, you said it's about 50%. You're about right. Now, you know, I don't know if this is correct or not, but in my opinion, I believe that the voting rate is so low here in the United States because, I mean, you've got people that don't even know what the candidates, you know, who the candidates are, what they're going to do when they get elected. You know, they don't even, basically, you got people here that don't even keep pay attention to the news and pay attention. They could care less about who gets elected and what they're going to do as president, basically. And, you know, and in my opinion, I mean, that's really a shame, really. It really is.
Well, you're right about the ignorance factor. I was reading an article the other day in a newspaper somewhere that said that there was a survey done of 18 to 24-year-olds in the US. I think it might have been an MTV poll. And it indicated something phenomenal like 70% couldn't name the candidates or the running mates or something like that. It was a really high factor.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I just found that remarkable. Obviously, there's something wrong with the system, though, if people feel either that they're not being reached by the candidates or that they just want to turn off because they don't see that it's important enough, that it's making a difference.
Yes, yes. I totally agree with you. And like I said, in an earlier open forum, I'd vote for Bush. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, you have to be 18 to do it. But I totally agree with you. I mean, it's really a shame that, you know, if it's correct, 70% of our nation, you know, that we can't, as a country, 70% of our people can't even name the candidates. I mean, these people need help.
Well, yeah, and that was in the 18 to 24 category. It was, I must dig out the story and look at it some more. But it was 70% with some pretty ordinary type of information. How is your state looking, by the way? Do we know from the polls whether it's going for Gore or Bush?
Let's see. My state, we really don't know. Let's see. The state of Florida. I believe, and I haven't been keeping up with the TV, news either for a couple of days, but, the last I heard, Bush is leading in the polls, but the sad thing is that, why don't we just vote for our president directly instead of having to go through all this crap with the electoral colleges, you know what I mean? That really makes me mad.
I'd be interested in some sort of defense of the electoral college from people, yeah. Yeah, I really would be interested in a defense of the electoral college. It seems to me that one of the really sad things about the electoral college from this distance is that it disadvantages third-party candidates really badly. And also, we could be in a situation, or you could be in a situation in a couple of days' time, where you have a president who gets fewer votes than his opponent, but wins the presidency because of the electoral college. It seems to me that what needs to happen is a system of preferential voting, so that, let's say you have, I know there are more than this, but for the sake of ease of explaining this, let's say you have four candidates, and you might have Bush, Gore, Buchanan, and Nader, and you'd be asked to rank those candidates. So let's say that, for example, you ranked Nader, Gore, Bush and Buchanan, let's say you're on the left of the spectrum, and you wanted Nader. What would happen then is if he didn't win, then the votes for Nader would transfer to the second preference, which in this case would be Gore. Now that would get rid of the argument that says, well, a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush, because if Nader dropped off the bottom, then his preferences would transfer to Gore if that's what people had said they wanted to do.
Exactly.
And to me, that seems like a really interesting system.
It is, and it's really a problem because, like you said, the people that the bad thing about our state is, well, our country really is that the president that, or the candidate really that gets the most votes will not be the one that wins. I mean, there's going to be one elector in one electoral college that would decide, okay, I like Bush, and I'm going to vote for Bush, you know, regardless of what the general public, what the general public's opinion is. And to me, I think that should be changed.
Well, what happens with the electoral college, of course, is that because by way of population, each state has a set number of votes in the electoral college, and for example, if the majority of people in your state vote for Bush, he will get all those electoral college votes. What's really interesting is what happens when there's a tie, if you get an equal number in the electoral college for both candidates. But the calls are really banking up here, so I'm going to have to go and deal with them. But I really appreciate your thoughts on that.
Sure.
Have a good evening.
Thank you too.
Okay, bye now. Hi, this is Blind Line. Speak to me.
Hello, Jonathan.
Oh, hi, Richard. We've got a huge delay again. How are you doing?
This is Richard from New York. Talking to you, Jonathan.
Yeah, this is going to be impossible, Richard. There is such a huge delay. It's like about 30 seconds.
I'm doing very well. I just get off the topic maybe a little. Oh, I'm sorry about that, Jonathan.
Yeah, it really is massive. See,
I guess, let me ask my question and then you can discuss it. I just wanted to talk about it a little differently. Now that AOL has come out with its version 6, it was supposed to be set up for screen readers, and I'm surprised I haven't heard anything about it, you know, for anyone about how accessible it really is.
Excellent. Well, that's a really good point, and if people want to comment on the accessibility or otherwise of AOL version 6, if you've given it a try, then please give us a call and let us know what you think. The number's in your title bar, but if you don't have access to that, it is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512, and I'm particularly interested in your thoughts on the elections. Hello, this is Blindline.
Good evening, Jonathan. This is yours truly out of Nashville.
Ah, the home state of Mr. Al Gore Jr.
Absolutely. He hangs out in Carthage, Tennessee.
Excellent. And how's it looking for you with less than 48 hours to the polls?
Too close to call, unfortunately.
It's amazing that I wonder what it says.
I could comment on the election.
Just before you make your comment, I wonder what it says about the fact that George W. is doing so well in his home state of Texas. His polling indicates that he's streets ahead there, and yet Al Gore is going to struggle to actually take Tennessee on Tuesday.
I think part of that is that George Bush decided to fight for Tennessee rather than letting it go. He decided he was going to fight for Tennessee as well as California and many other Democratic states. The only one he did not touch was New York. Figured that was too Democratic. But he thought Tennessee was winnable because it was primarily a Republican state. So he went after it, and that's, I think, what makes it competitive.
Well, it's a fascinating race, but let me not distract you from the comments you wanted to make anyway.
Okay, I'd like to comment about something that... Okay, are you familiar with Andy Rooney?
No, I'm not.
Okay, Andy Rooney is a commentator on the TV show 60 Minutes. Are you familiar with that show?
I'm familiar with the show. We get a completely different New Zealandized version here, so I don't get to access the American version.
Okay. So Andy Rooney does a piece at the end of 60 Minutes called A Few Minutes with Andy Rooney. Tonight's topic specifically dealt with the low voter turnout. And his thought was that those people who do not bother to vote, big riddance. Why? Because, as he sees it, they do not know about the issues, they do not care about the issues, and they do not have the intelligence to make an intelligent vote. He does not, for example, want someone who is a know-nothing on the issue, to cancel his vote out. So if his idea was, if you are undecided and you are not inclined to vote, do me a favor, do not go out and vote on Tuesday. Stay home and let those of us who do know how to vote, vote. He also says that he figures that the IQ of those people who do vote is significantly higher than the IQ of those who don't bother to vote. He wasn't worried about offending the latter because, as he put it, if they aren't intelligent enough to vote, they probably aren't watching 60 Minutes anyway.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just preaching to the choir, basically.
Well, that's a very interesting theory. I, having stood for election for public office twice here, and I accept that the culture may be completely different, but I would actually dispute the IQ thing. If you want to know how lacking in knowledge the average member of the public is, stand for public office. I mean, it really amazed me. But, you know, you get people, I'm sure you get people like this in the States, because we get people here, you know, I'm a Labour voter, I voted Labour all my life, my parents voted Labour. It's almost like being born into a religion. And I'm sure there must be people who are going to cast a vote on Tuesday in the US who are, you know, let's say Republicans or Democrats, they voted that way all their life, their parents voted that way, and it wouldn't matter if you put up a donkey for president, as long as they were running under that particular banner, they'd vote that way anyway.
That is entirely correct. There are plenty of people who do exactly that. They always vote the Republican ticket, or they always vote the Democratic ticket. The few that vote independent are a very tiny minority overall.
And who are you? Can I ask you who you're rooting for?
I am rooting for Gore. I've actually already voted. I voted by absentee, but also Tennessee allows people to vote early, along with Oregon, which allows voting by mail. By the way, Arizona was the primary state that allowed internet voting. I wasn't clear whether or not that was accessible to the blind, but they did allow it. And I'm not sure, actually, if they're doing that in Tuesday's election or not. I haven't heard. But Tennessee allows people to vote as much as 3 weeks early. I voted absentee, and I voted for Gore.
Why do you think Al Gore is going to make a better president than George W. Bush?
Because, in my personal opinion and observation, George Bush simply does not have the smarts and the wherewithal to really do a good job. Yes, he may surround himself with the best possible people. Unfortunately, these people may disagree on what the best policy to take is. And if you do not know enough about the issues yourself to determine what is the correct course, then you're going to be stuck with trying to decide between, say, Dick Cheney and Colin Powell, who may give diametrically opposed opinions on an item of foreign policy. If you don't know enough about foreign policy to determine which one has the better suggestion, then you're up the creek. I think Albert Gore knows much more about the issues, and while he would certainly take advice and should do so, I think he would be able to weed out the bad advice, look at the good advice, and do what is the right thing.
Let me ask you, because you're in Tennessee and you've
also
been...
Also, I believe that George... Now, nothing like a bill to make things interesting. I also think that George Bush has been disingenuous when he was talking about always wanting to tell the truth and always caring about character. You may or may not have heard last Thursday evening.
Oh, I heard.
A news report came out, courtesy of a Democratic activist in Maine, that he, Bush, had been arrested over the Labor Day weekend in 1976 on a DUI charge. He paid a $150 fine. His license was taken away for a period of time. They didn't say how long. And there you have it. The main complaint there was not so much the fact that he was arrested, though the case was certainly very serious, but the fact that he did not reveal that. He did not volunteer this information, and arguably, he lied to a Dallas newspaper reporter a couple of years ago when he was specifically asked had he been arrested any time after 1968. when he was arrested for a college prank. And he had said to the reporter, no.
Let me ask you, yes, I'd be interested in people's comments about what relevance they think the DUI charge has and whether it is going to make an impact on the poll that matters. I see that from the opinion polls that have come out today, some of which were taken after that revelation, it appears not to be making a dent at all. But let me ask you about Tennessee, because if you've lived there for a while, you will have observed Congressman Gore and Senator Gore and then Vice President Gore. It seems to me, having read a lot in the last couple of days about his voting record and his issues record, he seems to have had several road to Damascus experiences, to put it nicely. He had a record earlier on in the Congress of making some pro-life decisions on a pretty regular basis, taking pro-life stances. He's now defending a woman's right to choose. He seems to have had a change of mind on tobacco, for instance, and there are a number of those areas where it seemed that he was trying to cultivate the southern, you know, the Tennessee vote with positions that he obviously considered would be appropriate. And now that he's got a larger constituency to appeal to, namely the whole of the United States, he seems to have adopted positions at variance from those original positions.
I have not been in Tennessee long enough to observe a lot of his legislative activity. I do have an understanding, I believe, about his change in position on tobacco, though I cannot comment on his pro versus anti-abortion stances. He has not explained that issue at all. In fact, he has dissembled about that, trying to claim, when presented with this issue, that that change never happened. He says he was always pro-choice. Not quite true, but that's what he's been saying. The tobacco issue had to do with his sister having died from cancer due to smoking cigarettes. Unfortunately, his change was not immediate when he first talked about that. I believe it was in the 92 convention. His sister, I guess, had died in 88, and even a couple of years later, his family was still growing and cultivating tobacco. But eventually, they did get rid of the tobacco farm, and he became a staunch anti-tobacco person, as I have personally have always been. But I cannot comment intelligibly, I should say, on any of his other changes in views if I have not seen them.
Very interesting. Well, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, and it's going to be a real cliffhanger in 2 days' time, and I personally can't wait to watch it unfold.
Absolutely. Just out of curiosity, with this idea in mind, what are you going to do with Main Menu on Tuesday?
Main Menu will still go ahead, and what have we got on there? Excuse me. We've got an interview with Pete Donahue about the International Electronic Braille Library, and we've got Brian Hartgen talking about his new internet tutorial. We've got a review from Tim Noonan about a really cool new recorder from Sony that records on memory sticks, and we've got some information on installing Debian Linux and a few other goodies as well. So, you know, if you miss it because of the election, when it first plays, of course, you'll be able to hear it around the clock for 24 hours anyway.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, man.
I'm going to be personally concentrating on the election coverage. Something I hope C-SPAN does, I don't know if they will, but something I hope they do Monday night, and that is run in its entirety the NBC election night coverage from 1960, the last election in which we had a very thorough tally and did not get results. So after 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time on November 9th, 1960. I would love to see that. I was only 4 years old when that happened, so I wasn't watching it.
Yeah, C-SPAN is such a cool resource. I was on that site the other night looking for election news and information, and I came across another site they run called AmericanPresidents.org, and it's just the most fantastic, fascinating website full of articles and video and audio of American presidents. And of course they didn't have any video or audio of Washington and Jefferson, etc., but really interesting. And I was fascinated to read about the president who was it Van Buren, was that his name, who was speaking at his inauguration in the pouring rain for 2 hours and then died not so long after that of pneumonia.
No, that was Benjamin Harrison.
Was it? Okay.
Van Buren was before him.
It's fascinating.
Martin Van Buren followed Andrew Jackson. He was not the one that died of pneumonia.
Okay, just goes to show how much I know. It's a great site and a good resource, and I really enjoyed especially some of the later presidents where there was audio. For example, there's a really good long snippet of one of the 1960 debates between Kennedy and Nixon, which of course were considered pivotal to that campaign. And what was amazing to me was how less tolerant we've become over the years, not only in America but I think the Western world, of good quality debate. They had at the beginning of that debate 8 minutes each to give an opening statement. I mean, could you possibly imagine that happening in 2000?
No, that might make things a lot more interesting, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, it really allowed them to develop their case, and I thought it was fascinating. Of course, there's also Nixon's resignation speech on there, and I haven't even been to the Clinton part of the site yet to see what they've got from him. But it's a good site, AmericanPresidents.org. If people are interested in history, I'm sure they'll find that really good.
Yeah, they might have the part of his speech. It was actually following an educational news conference that he had at the White House, where he said these famous words: "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," etc., etc., etc.
"Miss Lewinsky, I never told anybody to lie, not a single time. These allegations are false, and now
That's
I need
right.
to go back and work with the American people."
One thing I find interesting is that people outside of the United States generally know a lot more about this country than its own citizens, and that is a travesty.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, nobody else I know in this country takes as much interest in it. Well, no, let me rephrase that. There are obviously some academics who are interested in political science and stuff who take interest in it. I think I'm a bit of an unusual case, mainly because I spent some of the best years of my life when I wasn't in the student pub studying American history and politics, so I find it interesting to see it develop. But, yeah, I mean, every so often we get an item on our news that says the campaign's close and they're going to have a bit of coverage on the day, but I think most people take a very fleeting interest, really.
Okay, I definitely know that a lot of Europeans know more about this country than his own citizens.
Well, there you go. I don't know. It's going to be good stuff, though. Well, have a good evening, and we'll look forward to your post-election analysis, perhaps, next week.
It just might have something.
Excellent.
You may need to get off the air early because it sounds like you're dying out there.
I've only got about 20-odd minutes to go, so I'm going to hang in there.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye now. Excuse me. See, now I'll see what he's done. ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. This is Jonathan Mosen, and if you're listening to the program live between 8 and 10 Eastern Time on a Sunday evening, 1 till 3 Universal, then you're welcome to give us a call. We have been talking predominantly about the US presidential election and which man will make the best president. If you'd like to contribute to that, you're most welcome to do that. Our number is area code 212-812-2800, and we do have a free board, by the way, so you'll get straight through. That's area code 212-812-2800, and then when you're asked to enter the PIN, you should enter, thanks to spiderphone.com, spiderphone, 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. 1212. We'll be delighted to get your call if you want to discuss the US presidential election and what's going to happen. Well, won't the CNN people go berserk if they get into a situation where the electoral college is tied? And I mean, it's certainly, if it's going to happen, it may well happen this time. And it is nice to have an election that really is too close to call. With the way the polls now are so insidious everywhere, it's not that often these days that you can get an election campaign in the Western world where a couple of days out you can't really say who's going to win, because generally all of these polls are within the margin of error. And so it is too close to call right now. And I think it'll be fascinating to see what happens on Tuesday when people go to the polls. And whatever you do, if you're in the US and you're a citizen and you have the right to vote, make sure that you go out there and do that, because it is one of the most sacred rights and privileges that anyone in a democracy has. And if you don't do that, then we will not put up with you whinging for the next 4 years. So, if you'd like to talk about that, you're most welcome. Give us a call, you'll get straight through. Also, we have had a call from Richard from New York with a 30-second delay asking about AOL 6.0. The software is out. Exciting claims are being made about its accessibility. Can you use it? Have you had a go? Would you use it? Be interested in hearing exactly how good AOL 6.0 is. So if you'd like to comment on that and you're not bothered with the politics, you're most welcome to give us a call and talk about that. You can also talk about any other topic that you wish to. It's an open forum, and that's what it's all about here on Blind Line. So give us a call, because it's really dull talking to oneself. Don't forget that we have our new format, and if you haven't become familiar with that new schedule for ACB Radio, it is up on the web page now at www.acbradio.org, and you should check it out, because there are new times for a whole lot of programs. And tomorrow, for example, at 8 o'clock Eastern Time in the evening, that's Tuesday at 1 Universal Time, well, you can hear Dennis Miller. He has more live talk radio for you here on ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community, and that's the Miller Time program. So you can call in and speak with Dennis. I haven't received information about what he's going to be covering, but watch the announcements list for that. And then at 2 o'clock Universal, that's 9 o'clock Eastern, you can hear the Whole Note program with Jeremy Hartley, the program for blind musicians. Here's someone who's come to the rescue from area code 302. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Lynn Schneider from Delaware.
Hello, Lynn. I haven't heard from you for a wee while.
Yes. Well, I wanted to make a point on the elections. Actually, I wanted to make a couple points. First of all, I think you have addressed the literacy issue, that perhaps the American people are not as literate as they need to be in many different ways. But I think also the one thing that hasn't been addressed is the sense that I get from speaking with my friends and coworkers, that there's a cynicism, that people feel that nothing that they do really matters. A friend of mine expressed it this way. She said, well, you know, the world is really controlled by a handful of multinational corporations, and politicians are bought and sold. And so what does our vote have, you know, what effect does it have at all? I mean, there's so much, I guess people just feel that, and I see this a lot in my generation, I'm 32, but a lot of people say, what difference does it make? I mean, basically, again, you have the two-party system, and it's, basically, who spends the most money wins the election, and who gets the most support from these large corporations. I think that's what the sense that I've been hearing from a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I was reading in... no, I wasn't. There was an item on CNN earlier in the day on one of their programs, the talk show Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer. I always thought it used to be great when Wolf Blitzer used to be the reporter at the Pentagon. I couldn't think of a better name for a defense reporter than Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer. But anyway, he had a thing on there saying that they reckon that it's up to some huge figure that's spent on these elections, something like... Oh, I forget. It's in the billions of dollars, though, when you add up all of the campaign ads from the special interest groups and the candidates and all of that, that it's huge money that this election is costing, and yet it doesn't seem to really be impacting in any way either on the voter turnout or the quality of the candidates, arguably.
Well, right, and the other point I wanted to make was we mentioned George W. Bush's DUI. I think that the American people have to understand that I don't think there are many people who have a totally squeaky clean past. I mean, I'm sure if someone were to look into our backgrounds, they would come up with something. For example, true confessions. I'm a Napster user, and I've downloaded so many MP3s from Napster that if somebody got a hold of that, they could say, well, you know, this is a person who steals music and violates copyright laws. You know, I mean, I can't imagine that by the time you get to be an adult, if there's not something in your past that someone could misinterpret or overinterpret as being, you know, criminal in some way.
Yes, having questioned some of Al Gore's policy commitments earlier, I should try and balance it up with a comment on the other side, and that is that it strikes me as fascinating that, particularly in 1992, there were a lot of comments about Bill Clinton's character, and in particular the whole Jennifer Flowers thing, and yet while those kinds of actions may be repugnant to many people, marital infidelity, it's not actually illegal. It may be highly immoral, and in fact is, but it's not illegal. And yet here we have somebody who actually has a criminal record. I mean, drinking in charge of a motor vehicle, it's a criminal offence, and it could have resulted in the death of some innocent person, be it in the car or in another car. And you have the Republicans trying to describe the actions of this 30-year-old man as a youthful indiscretion, and at least he's owned up to it and put it behind him.
Great. I think that would be interesting from a psychological viewpoint to study that, to figure out why the American people will tolerate one thing and not another thing. It would be an interesting cultural study to do, I think.
Well, you know, this is where the American presidential election does have an impact for people outside of America's borders, of course, because you think, well, if someone has a propensity to be a bit susceptible to certain substances, do we want that person with his finger on the button?
Right, exactly. Well, I think if I do vote, it will be George Bush, but having said that,
are you still there, man? Oh, I heard it. She seems to have gone. I'm still... Oh, yes, you're still here. Can you hear me, Lynn? Huh. Well, we seem to have lost it, and I don't know what happened there, but I apologise, because she was just going to tell us why she was voting for Governor Bush, and I was looking forward to that, because we had a Vice President Gore supporter before, and I was thinking, well, that's jolly good balance. But let me see. Well, I don't know whether we've had some sort of technical glitch with our phone system or not, but we'll try and plod on regardless. This is ACB Radio Mainstream, and do you know what? I think that Spiderphone has just gone weird on me. I've lost the calls. So that's a bit of a shame, but I think we might have to leave it there. Yes, it says conference ended. I wonder who ended it. I mean, you know, we were just happily talking away there, and now it says conference ended, so we'll just have to forget that. And I apologise to Lynn, who was about to tell us how she was going to vote. We'll wrap it up for Blind Line for today then, because it's not worth going through all the very complicated procedure of logging back in. I do appreciate your calls, and thanks very much to Penny Reeda for a fascinating chat. Thanks to all of you for putting up with me and my voice. As I say, my final plea to you is that, given that the majority of our listeners are in the US, and you've got an election, to make the effort and cast that vote, irrespective of who it is that you're going to vote for. You might give some thought to those people who have fought and died for our rights to cast votes in free societies. And the least we can do for the sake of our democracy is to honour them by exercising that hard-fought for and hard-won right. I wish you all the best. It's going to be fun watching it unfold. If you're listening to this program live, there will be a gap while we upload the archive of Blind Line to play on the EasyCast. And then if you miss the beginning of the show, you'll be able to hear it again. The next time that we change programs will be the Miller Time Show at 1 o'clock Universal on Tuesday morning. That's 8 o'clock Eastern on Monday night. More live talk, so tune in to Dennis and have your say. Until we meet again, this is Jonathan Mosen saying have a really good night. Bye for now.